This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Is it the beginning of the end or the end of the beginning, or what is it when Donald Trump, President of the United States, declares this is a historic day for eternal peace in the Middle East? A historic day for eternal peace. Not just for peace, but for eternal peace. The scriptures tell us that men will cry peace, peace, but there will be no peace. So what is this talking about? Is this a true peace? Is this a wannabe peace? Is this a real peace? And how could it be an eternal peace when there will be no eternal peace until the return of Christ? Consider the words, eternal peace. We need to really seriously consider what this is. The world is in excitement. There's all kinds of excitement going on. Yesterday, Donald Trump said that the Gaza deal's in final stages. Another article from the Jerusalem Post said that Netanyahu faces high-stakes choice as Trump presses the Gaza war deal. And all of that was yesterday. Mike Johnson said, that is the Speaker of the House, said that the West Bank belongs to Israel after Donald Trump opposed Israel's annexation of the West Bank, which actually is Judea and Samaria, the heartthrob of ancient Israel. All of that was yesterday, and now today, the promise of his eternal peace and historic day for the world. Not just for the Israel, not just for Gaza, but for the world. So let's take a look at what this is about. This has just been announced today as our president met with Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House. All of the anticipation was there. People with bated breath were hoping that there would be a resolution, some sort of a resolution. And so President Donald Trump declared today a historic day for eternal peace in the Middle East following the meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House. So he said, this is a big, big day, a beautiful day, potentially one of the greatest days ever in civilization, said Donald Trump. One of the greatest days ever in civilization. These are very important words to remember, friends. Very important words. And I hope you will remember them. In fact, you'll remember them if you listen to this program today and you know you will have well remembered them. He went on to say that things have been going on for hundreds of years and thousands of years, and we're going to at least, we're at a minimum very, very close, and I think we're beyond very close, said Donald Trump. I'm not just talking about Gaza. Gaza is one thing, but we're talking about much beyond Gaza. The whole deal, everything getting solved. It's called peace in the Middle East. The White House, Trump's Principles for Peace, said earlier, which Trump said Netanyahu had agreed to, but not Hamas. I'm hearing Hamas wants to get this done, said Trump, which is a good thing. So today, again, President Trump said, is a historic day for peace, including Iran trade, the expansion of the Abraham Accords. And most importantly, he said, we discussed how to end the war in Gaza. But it's just a part of a bigger picture, which is peace in the Middle East, and let's call it eternal peace in the Middle East. There it is again. This language is extremely important, friends, for those who profess to be followers of Jesus Christ and students of the Bible. The president went on to say, so this is a far more important than anybody expected. Level of support that I've had from the nations in the Middle East and surrounding Israel and neighbors of Israel has been incredible. Within 72 hours of Israel's publicly expecting the agreement, all hostages, alive and deceased, will be returned. Once all hostages are released, Israel released 250 Palestinian prisoners serving life sentences, plus 1,700 Gazans who were detained after Hamas terror strike of October 7th. For every Israeli hostage whose remains are released, Israel will release the remains of 15 deceased Gazans. Hamas is believed to be holding 48 hostages, 20 of whom are believed to be alive. Once all hostages are returned, Hamas members who committed to peaceful coexistence and to decommission their weapons will be given amnesty. Members of Hamas who wish to leave Gaza will be provided safe passage to receiving countries. A Trump economic development plan to rebuild and energize Gaza will be created. And that's the overall expression of the eternal peace. There's going to be a committee made up of qualified Palestinians and international experts with oversight and supervision by a new international transitional body called the Board of Peace, which will be chaired by Donald Trump, with other members and heads of state to be announced, including former Prime Minister Tony Blair. And so this is the deal. This is the eternal peace, the wannabe eternal peace. And it's a delight to be able to report this to you, but I am concerned that it is not necessarily a report rooted in delight. It's only delight from Donald Trump's viewpoint, or from Benjamin Netanyahu's viewpoint, or from those in the UN or the EU that are crying for peace, when there is no peace and cannot be any peace. The UN couldn't bring it about. They didn't really want peace. The UN was radically against Israel. 165 countries having declared a Palestinian state. So they were of no interest to Israel whatsoever. So it appears that Donald Trump has seized the moment, seized the day, carpe diem, seized the day, and brought about what others thought was impossible. Well, the impossible has become possible, at least from a broad-based understanding today. And so we take a look at what's going to happen from today. Senator Lindsey Graham says, I don't support ending the war if it means Hamas is not defeated. The GOP senator and Trump ally responds to reports that the U.S. is now pressuring Israel to accept greater compromises on its war goals in order to end the war quickly. In other words, peace at any cost. I'm not in favor of peace at any cost. When it comes to terrorist threats, said Senator Graham, Israel must be allowed to defend itself and finish the job. While I strongly support trying to end major military operations in Gaza and move toward a new Middle East, it's imperative that this be accomplished in the right way, he said. I do not support ending major military operations if it means that Hamas is not eliminated forever and does not ensure that there will ever be another October 7th. So, a U.S. senator who is a supporter of Donald Trump says, you know what? I'm not sure I support this. I don't think it has teeth in it. So is this the eternal peace? Or is this the precursor to a alleged eternal peace? We'll be back. This is Viewpoint.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
President Trump today called the agreement that was at least tentatively set forth as eternal peace in the Middle East, resolving all problems, all conflicts, and said that he calls on Hamas to accept the extremely fair deal and says that this is Netanyahu's crowning achievement. Crowning achievement. Well, Mr. Trump believes it's his crowning achievement and believes that now he has secured the promised Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, if you're going to settle this particular deal, then by all means, you are by definition entitled to the Nobel Peace Prize. And that's what Donald Trump has been seeking. He goes on and tells us about how he has solved seven wars that were intractable. And I don't put him down for that at all. But now he was told the only way he could possibly get be entitled to the Nobel Peace Prize is to settle the Palestinian issue and the war in Gaza. Well, now he claims to not only to have done that, but gone way beyond that to establish an eternal peace. And anybody who would establish an eternal peace in the Middle East, the centerpiece of strife for thousands of years, must, by definition, be entitled to the Nobel Peace Prize. On the other hand, when you seek something like a peace prize, you're willing to compel others to forfeit important things in order to achieve that goal. That's why the problem of pursuing peace is an elusive problem. It's elusive. It's always elusive. And that's why the ancient prophets said, men will cry, peace, peace, but there will be no peace. So if you pursue peace at any cost, it's like pursuing unity at any cost. In fact, it's almost identical. Just exchange the word unity for the word peace, and you'll find where the problem is. Because, indeed, most human beings want to live in some sort of unity so that they can have peace. On the other hand, there are so many differences between the people that they cannot be at unity because they're in disunity. They believe opposite things. And that's why it's almost impossible in this country, America, to have unity. We did a whole program on that a week or two ago. The elusive nature of unity. Even as Christians, it's very difficult, almost impossible, to gain unity. People say that's what God intends, that God wants us to pursue unity. In fact, maybe that's not true, because Jesus never said that. What Jesus said in John 17, which is called the high priestly prayer, is that he talks to the Father, God, and he says, sanctify or set them, that is the disciples and those who will follow them, set them apart according to thy truth. Thy word is truth. So he said, the truth is the only way you can achieve unity. Unity is not to be pursued, it's to be the fruit of the embracing of truth. So, in a similar way, peace is not something that can actually be pursued per se. You can try, but in order to get there, you have to achieve all kinds of compromises. So, in reality, it's not peace at all. In reality, it's a compromise cessation of open warfare. But the true peace behind it continues to be elusive because there's no agreement. The Abraham Accords have exactly the same problem. They tried to achieve a level of peace based upon, or a level of accord, you might say, based upon the fact that all of the people in those various countries were the physical descendants of Abraham. Not Abraham and Isaac, but Abraham, either through Isaac or through Ishmael. And so there was an ignoring of the radical difference between the Ishmaelites and the Isaacites, in other words, Israel, in order to achieve Abrahamic accords, which were only a figment of peace and accord, and that they were celebrated. I understand well why they were celebrated, because even to get to that point was almost miraculous. When the Arab or Ishmaelite nations would not accept Israel and its existence, you had a major problem. So in the Abraham Accords, at least they recognized Israel's existence. But they never recognized that Israel was the product of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, who were called the children of Israel, whom God said were heirs according to the promise rather than the descendants of Ishmael. And so you still have a major, major difference. So there's a rudiment of peace, but not the reality of peace. The same is true here. You can say that you've achieved an eternal peace, but in reality, it can't be an eternal peace unless all differences have been removed, unless there's a unity in truth. You see, when there's a unity in truth, the differences are removed. Then you don't have division. Division is the result of the failure of individuals or people groups or nations to embrace false truths. In other words, embrace positions that are not true from God's viewpoint. Now, they may be true from their viewpoint, but not true in absolute terms. And that's wherein lies the problem with the use of the term eternal peace, because there's only one eternal peace from God's viewpoint. And that is peoples made in God's image who embrace the Savior of the world, the Son of God, Jesus Yeshua HaMashiach, as Lord and Savior. Well, he is the descendant of Abraham, yes, but he's also the descendant of David, a Jew. Read Matthew 1:1. Jesus Christ, the son of Abraham, the son of David. The son of Abraham by faith, the son of David by lineage. No Arab is the son of Abraham, of David by lineage. No. They're the sons of Ishmael and Esau. And so we have a problem. It's very important for us as Christians to recognize this problem, because otherwise we get all excited and jump up and down and think that the world has now reconciled and everything is going to be peace and joy and hope and oneness of purpose and mind and heart, and we'll all live happily ever after, rejoicing in the Lord and the promise of salvation. It isn't true. This just isn't true. It may be Netanyahu's crowning achievement from an earthly viewpoint or from a Goyim's viewpoint, that is a non-Israelite, but from the Israelites' viewpoint, here's the latest report from the Jerusalem Post. Netanyahu's coalition could revolt as Trump pushes Gaza peace deal in Washington. The president reportedly advanced a 21-point framework to end the Gaza war. Coalition partners defy the prime minister, while opposition voices predict imminent collapse of his government. The Israeli parliament opened the week today, or yesterday, with a scene that could define the country's political future. Coalition partners openly challenged Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office, advancing a controversial death penalty debate against his request just hours before Netanyahu's meeting with President Trump in Washington. The confrontation exposed deep fractures within the coalition at the very moment the United States reportedly shared a 21-point framework with several Arab and Muslim governments on the sidelines at the United Nations General Assembly, raising the question of whether Netanyahu can actually deliver on the American proposal or whether his government will collapse before he even tries. So the immediate confrontation centered on the National Security Committee, which convened yesterday, Sunday, to advance legislation on capital punishment for terrorists. Netanyahu's office had asked that the debate be postponed, wary of how much such a move might complicate sensitive hostage negotiations and send a troubling signal abroad. But Yehudit led the National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir pressed ahead. Four lawmakers voted in favor, one opposed, and the measure moved forward despite warnings from security officials, the hostage coordinator, and the prime minister's own advisors. For many observers, the incident was not simply about the death penalty, but about the deeper authority of the prime minister over his fractious coalition. So, things are divided profoundly in Israel, just as they are here in the United States. They really are. A parliamentarian defended the decision, speaking to the media line while touring border communities near Gaza. He said his party's position was clear. When terrorists know they face a death sentence in Israeli prisons, it sends a very significant message. For those holding the hostages in Gaza, the only way for them to survive is to return the hostages or provide information. This is our worldview on how to confront terror. However, the timing of the debate seems to have been no coincidence. We're rather part of a calculated effort to shape the climate ahead of any diplomatic moves. So they drew a direct line to the reported American plan, warning that, quote, we did not go to war in Gaza in order to hand it over on a silver platter to another terror organization. The Palestinian Authority is the biggest funder of terror against the Jewish people. If after 2 years of war we simply give Gaza to another terror entity, we are not willing to accept that. Okay, well, what does that mean? You say, well, is that what Donald Trump is intending to do? Is that what his plan is all about? Well, yes and no. They would not say that openly like that, but it appears that they're trying to set up a situation where the rulership over Gaza initially is taken over by a special authority or committee that is going to be led by Tony Blair, the former prime minister of the UK. Well, but where is it going to go after that? The concern is that the leadership is going to go back to the Palestinian Authority, which basically is ruled under the dominion and authority of Hamas. Therefore, the concern is that ultimately this is going to turn the whole situation back on its head and end up with Hamas leading again. Now you can see how this would be a problem. You can see how the concerns are here. How much will you be willing to give up in order to achieve a so-called peace? The talk among the ultra-Orthodox factions in Israel is that Netanyahu's government is going to collapse, and so will Netanyahu. Then what are they going to do? So they're saying now the best thing for the people of Israel is to go to elections or re-elect the government they want. And polls are showing it would be a totally different government. Maybe a wider one, including right, center, and Zionist left parties. However, I can tell you almost of a certainty, friends, that what would happen if that were the case is Israel would end up entering into an agreement, entering into a covenant, whatever you want to call it, a treaty, an agreement, a covenant, that would spell its ultimate demise, that would lead to such a terrifying situation for Israel, not peace, but a greater sword than they ever have experienced. You say, how so? Well, we'll talk about that when we get back. You're listening to Viewpoint, friends. Viewpoint does determine destiny. I urge you to get a copy of my book, King of the Mountain. I think it'll help you to understand the greater contestants here in all of this battle. $15 will put that $20 book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismier and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismier. If you don't have that book, King of the Mountain, you really need to get it. It'll open your eyes to see the broader perspective, not just of this limited issue here. This is just, shall we say, a skirmish, a political skirmish that seems to be so great. And that's understandable. But in fact, it's just a, shall we say, a peripheral skirmish for a much greater agenda. The greater agenda has to do with who, what country, or what power, or what individual will ultimately rule and reign for the Temple Mount. That's really what the bigger issue is. You won't hear it talked about in this context because everybody wants to focus on the narrow issue here. But that's only part of the situation. It's, shall we say, a step, one more step in the direction of determining who Satan will ultimately have invested himself in to become King of the Mountain or to become the Antichrist. Now, ultimately, Jesus Christ is going to become King of the Mountain. God already declared that in Psalm 2. He said, "Yet I have set my king on my holy hill, notwithstanding what all these nations are wanting to do." The psalmist says, why do the nations rage and the people imagine a vain and foolish thing? They're declaring against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let's tear their bands asunder. That's what's been going on with the EU. That's what's been going on with the UN. That's why 165 countries now, as of this last week, have determined to declare a Palestinian state. It ain't going to work. The Palestinians themselves don't want a two-state solution. They don't. What they want, that is Hamas and the more aggressive of those, what they really want is a one state where they rule and destroy Israel. That's what they really want. But they're willing to take steps in order to get there. And that's what the UN and the EU do not understand, don't want to understand, because they have very, very short-sighted views. And they are radically non-biblical, both in their intentions and in their understanding. If you do not have a biblical viewpoint, you cannot possibly comprehend what's taking place. It doesn't make sense. You have to have a biblical viewpoint, but the very fact that somebody might declare they had a biblical viewpoint, like Senator Graham, or like Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, saying that Judea and Samaria, the West Bank, belong to Israel, the moment you say that, then you've already colored yourself with a non-peace-making attitude, because that is perceived to be a complete peace blocker. So this whole business of Judea and Samaria, as far as I'm concerned, is a serious nut to crack. And when Donald Trump, this last week, warned Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu on no uncertain terms do not try to annex Judea and Samaria or the West Bank. Do not. I won't support you. I will oppose you. Do not do it. What's he actually saying? You either get in line with my viewpoint or I'm not going to help you. That's basically what he's saying. But I'm the only one in position to help you, as you well know. Therefore, you're going to do what I say or else. I'm putting it in actual terms the way it really is. That's what Donald Trump intended to communicate. Now, if God decreed that Judea and Samaria were part of Israel, the Israel that he deeded in an eternal inheritance to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, then what business did Donald Trump have to arrogate himself to declare otherwise? Would he do that? Would he go in opposition to God himself and God's declared words in order to gain the Nobel Peace Prize? What would you do? How great would the flesh, your fleshly desires, press upon you to compel you to do things, say things that were radically contrary to the express word, will, and ways of God? That's where we are right now. There are some who say, who are probably thinking, wow, that's pretty tough talk for troubled times. These are troubled times, friends, who don't realize it yet. These are ultimate times. These are not pretend times. This is not a little dance that we're doing here. These are ultimate issues from God's viewpoint. God's called Israel the apple of his eye, did he not? He also said then, whoever messes with Israel messes with the apple of my eye. In other words, I take it seriously and personally. So, when you decide that you're going to declare that you are going to unalterably oppose Israel annexing, in other words, bringing back into its governing land zone, Judea and Samaria, which are currently under the dominion of Palestinians, if there is such a group, you are actually declaring your opposition to God. I don't know about you, but to me, that's the ultimate chutzpah. People want to understand, well, how can I know God's will? Well, one of the clearest ways you know God's will is by what he says. How do you know what would not be in God's will? By knowing what he says, what he opposes. So when God says that he, to Abraham, that he gave an eternal leasehold to Israel, the children of Israel, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, not Ishmael, Jacob, Isaac and Jacob, and he gives the meets and bounds from the southern part of Lebanon all the way to Egypt, and from the Mediterranean Sea all the way over to the Euphrates River, cutting across Jordan, cutting across Syria. So actually, Israel is entitled by God to certain areas, large areas of Syria and Jordan and Lebanon and perhaps some parts of Egypt. That's what God sees. That may not be what the UN sees. It may not be what Donald Trump sees. But Donald Trump doesn't have a biblical view, notwithstanding the fact that Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, who claims to be an Orthodox Jew, is actually behind the scenes driving this particular deal for an eternal peace. I don't understand it. Apparently, Jared Kushner doesn't fully understand what the Bible has to say. See, even Orthodox Jews don't get it. Just like evangelical Christians don't get it. Don't want to get it. Because if you have ulterior motives and you want to achieve peace at any price, you're going to be willing to give up you're going to be able to be willing to compromise what God has said. How many people have been willing to compromise, professing Christians have been willing to compromise what God said when he said, don't be unequally yoked together with unbelievers? So you say, well, that applies to marriage, right? Well, yes, it does, but that's not all it applies to. It applies to business deals. It applies to partnerships. It applies to anywhere where you are identifying and becoming, shall we say, co-equal in responsibility with someone who is not a believer. We could go into that for 6 to 12 minutes right now. I could give you illustrations across the country how Christians intentionally, knowingly, and almost defiantly go against what God has said. In order to achieve secondary agendas that they think are good. And unfortunately, I believe that's what we're dealing with here. I'm not here to rail upon Donald Trump, President Trump. I'm not here to rail upon Benjamin Netanyahu. Pressure, I don't think you can imagine the extraordinary pressure that Benjamin Netanyahu is under right now. From the President of the United States, from the EU, from the UN, from the Orthodox Jews, from the atheistic Russian Jews in Israel, from the liberal Jews in Israel. I mean, where's the support base? So, this is the position that we are at, so to speak. According to opposition to Benjamin Netanyahu right now, in his government, Netanyahu's government is already collapsing under its own contradictions. It's already 6 months since the ultra-Orthodox started leaving the coalition. Netanyahu hasn't managed to pass any legislation in these months. Why? Because they're trying to sue him out of the office, just like they did Donald Trump. I'm not kidding you. Trying to declare him a criminal. How are you going to operate? How are you going to govern? How do you have the strength to govern amid conditions like that? And then one of the leaders, Ben-Gvir, has shown today that he's already deep in the election campaign, and that's why he led the legislation against Netanyahu's will. So in his view, the coalition, the Netanyahu coalition, has become paralyzed and cannot govern. That's the background now. And so Donald Trump declared today that this is Benjamin Netanyahu's crowning glory of his whole administration to enter into this deal, supposedly for eternal peace. When we get back from this, friends, we're going to talk about an idea that the Bible scorns.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click sell church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. We're talking about the agreement that has been tentatively established today and declared, trumpeted from the White House, well, actually trumpeted from the UN there in New York. That's where all this is being trumpeted from. United Nations? Wait a minute. Nations united against Israel? Maybe that's really what it is. Nations united against Israel and wanting to compel Israel to do its will. Not interested in Israel's well-being or future from God's viewpoint, but willing to redefine Israel from their viewpoint, a secular viewpoint that promises an elusive peace called an eternal peace. Now, the pressure that Benjamin Netanyahu is under is very interesting. Senator Lindsey Graham said, following an Axios report, that an advisor to President Trump involved in the American plan to end the war said Monday that if Prime Minister Netanyahu does not agree to the deal currently being pushed by the Trump administration, the White House will see him as at fault for continuing the war, enabling Hamas and doing nothing for the Palestinians who have so many humanitarian needs. People will continue to starve. Let's hope we get there. The Arabs have agreed to it like 100%. Now we're waiting for the president to work his magic on Netanyahu, said the writer of the Axios report. Do you see the pressure? Pressure. Now, pressure, friends, is the word that is translated tribulation in the New Testament. When Jesus said, in the world you will have tribulation, just substitute the word pressure. Are you having pressure yet? Are you feeling any pressure yet? Of course you are. There are different levels of pressure, different kinds of pressure. They come in different ways. My wife and I are undergoing several levels of pressure even as we speak today. We all have pressures that we deal with. But we try to cast our care upon the Lord, trust Him to deal with those situations and go from there, because we hold this treasure in earthen vessels. So the great tribulation is the great pressure. Ultimately, what this is leading to is the great tribulation. This is one step toward the great tribulation. The Bible doesn't talk about any other the tribulation. It just talks about pressure in general. And that pressure can increase just like it did in the French Revolution. But ultimately, there is a level of pressure that is so great that Jesus called it the Great Tribulation in Matthew chapter 24. And he said, because of that, the deception in the world is going to be so great that if it were possible, even the very small remnant elect who are enduring to the end would be tempted not to be saved. That's what Jesus said. You can read it right there in Matthew 24. Now, all that having been set in context, we go back to Tony Blair. The former British Prime Minister, Tony Blair, has become a key figure in President Donald Trump's efforts to end the war in Gaza between Israel and the Hamas terrorists. The Wall Street Journal reported on Friday that under Trump's plan being proposed to Arab and Israeli leaders, the 72-year-old Blair would serve as interim administrator of Gaza, overseeing a body known as the Gaza International Transitional Authority. All right. I want to reveal some things to you. For whatever it is, whatever you think of it, I'm just going to reveal some things to you. And then we can determine, you can think, imagine, ask the Lord, what could happen as a result of this. But when Tony Blair left the prime ministership of not so jolly old England, he was then an Anglican. He was then of the Church of England. He went straight to the Vatican, to the Pope, and converted to papal Catholicism. He subjected himself from that point on to papal dominion in his life and everything he did. From there, he went to New York and formed an organization, and he said he was dedicating the rest of his life, get this, dedicating the rest of his life to unite the religions of the world. I'm not kidding you, that's what he said. In fact, he went further. He said, religion is the new politics. Now, this is the man who is being selected out to become the administrator of Gaza, overseeing a body known as the Gaza International Transitional Authority. In other words, this is being placed under the papacy. The papacy now will have complete rule over what is done in the Gaza International Transitional Authority. What will that mean? What will that overlay of authority mean? When the Pope considers himself to be the alternative to God, the vicar of God, or standing in the place of Christ, and when the papacy has declared already it does not intend to rule the world from the Vatican, but from the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, do you not see how this trajectory is being set up for the papacy to completely control the Middle East? That's what this is about. So I want you to think about that. Let that resonate in your mind and your heart. And then we go to this. In the book of Isaiah, chapter 28, we have a very troubling passage. And here's what it says. Are you listening? Isaiah chapter 28, starting with verse 14. Wherefore, hear the word of the Lord, ye scornful men that rule this people which is in Jerusalem. He's talking about the leaders of Israel now. Whoever they might be, is it the Sanhedrin? Is it the secular government of Israel as a democracy? Is it all of the above? It doesn't tell us. Hear the word of the Lord, ye scornful men that rule this people which is in Jerusalem. Now, what makes them scornful? I thought they were the children of God, the children of Israel. I thought they were the apple of God's eye. Yes, they were, but they rebelled. Just like many in the church have rebelled. Maybe almost most. The rebellion is great in this country and across the world. In fact, it's almost complete. Just as President Donald Trump declares an eternal peace, there is virtually an eternal rebellion that is going on instead. Not just in the Middle East, but all over the world. Disagreeing with God. Disagreeing with God's viewpoint concerning Israel and its purposes. The word goes on to say, because you, that is you scornful men that rule this people Israel, because you have made a covenant with death, and with hell are we at agreement, when the overflowing scourge shall pass through, it shall not come unto us, for we have made lies our refuge, and under falsehood have we hid ourselves. Oh. Now, that sounds awfully much like, friends, entering into a peace agreement. Some sort of a peace agreement, whether you call it a covenant, whether you call it a treaty, whatever you want to call it, a covenant with death. Now, why would it be a covenant with death? Because it's in disagreement with what God has said. It's deciding to try to do an end run around what you know the Bible says about Israel, what the Bible says about the Jewish people, and the decisions that you make, and yet you're going to do an end run around it to try to avoid what you think are the consequences that are going to happen to you and not trust God. So they say, with hell are we in agreement. In other words, agreement with that which is contrary to the word, will, and ways of God concerning the peoples and nation of Israel that God chose, not because they were so great. He just chose to love them and to make promises to them, which he said, I will never break, even if the sun fails to shine and the moon fails to glow. Only if that were to happen would my covenant with Israel be broken. So, these leaders of Israel are not trusting God. And when the overflowing scourge shall pass through, they think it won't come to us. Why? Because of the agreement, the covenant. They think the agreement is going to prevent them from having any more problems. That it's going to be bring peace on earth, goodwill toward men, and all the neighbors are going to be reconciled with them, and we're all going to have a lovey-dovey Abraham Accord celebration. It's not going to work that way. What this is ultimately going to do is give the nations surrounding Israel even greater authority and unite them together to make their one final effort with the other nations of the world, like the UN, to finally bring Israel under dominion. In fact, you can read about it in Zechariah chapter 12. In Zechariah chapter 12, the nations of the earth are going to surround Israel, surround Jerusalem. And God says, I'm going to deal with them. I'm going to deal with them big time. It ain't going to be pretty when I deal with them. And the prophet Joel, he says, I'm going to bring them into the valley of Jehoshaphat and judge them there for what they did to my people, how they caused them to give up their land and trade their land off, which wasn't their land anyway, it was my land, he said. So the land is God's land, he said, over and over again in his word. But these leaders of Israel are so pressured, they're under pressure, phlipsis, the Greek word for tribulation, for pressure. They're under this pressure that has been placed excruciatingly upon them. And they feel we must conform. What else can we do? The whole world is against us. Well, God said the whole world was going to be against you. It says that you will be alone among the nations of the earth. Right there, the book of Numbers, chapter, about 24? You'll not be reckoned among the nations. Israel wants to be reckoned among the nations. But God says you're not going to be reckoned among the nations because I have called you out. And the same is true for you, my friend, and for me. As professing Christians, the apostles said, come apart and be ye separate. And I will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters. As it is with Israel, so it is with professing Gentile Christians. Are we really willing to come apart and be separate? To do things God's way exclusively? Or are we going to make a covenant with death as well? Always compromising to gain an elusive peace. Think about it. Pray about it. Get a copy of my book, King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic and End Time Battle. $15 will put the $20 book in your hands. You won't be disappointed. It's on the website, saveus.org. Call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us. And thanks so much for some of you who are actually hearing the cry to up your giving.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.